Alright, we're recording. Thanks so much to the commission for coming out tonight to the May 7th Comprehensive Plan Workshop. There are friends from Benchmark here. We're going to go over the draft of the comprehensive plan. This is a long time coming. We've tried different avenues to try to get this done, and for one reason or another, you know, it's been slow, but they've got a whole draft. I hope everybody's had a chance to review it. Maybe not memorize it, but go over it anyway. But I don't know exactly how tonight's meeting is going to go. We're going to listen to you guys. We'll probably have some feedback here and there. But anyway, let me turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It's been a little while since we were here last. When we were here last time, we went through a lot of the draft recommendations, but as mentioned, now we have a full draft plan. And so we wanted to take some time to kind of orient you to that. So we've had some time to review it already, but this way we can kind of go through and then give specific feedback. We can talk through that.
Is the PA system
working? Yes. You don't want to find
the center. So as I mentioned, we're just going to run through the draft plan and then kind of orient you to what's in it, and then we'll go through if you have any specific feedback we'd like to discuss on the actual draft. Our plan is to go through this with you all informally tonight, and then at the end of the month on May 26th, we'll do the formal review of the plan so that you could consider making a recommendation to council. And then it will go through three meetings with council and hopefully be adopted by July. So the draft has three major sections. There's first an executive summary that gives you kind of the big points. And then there's an introduction section that talks about what the plan is and how to use it. And then there's a vision and framework section. And this really has the bulk of all the recommendations. It has the goals, the actions, specific strategies, and then the future land use map as well. And then the last section is the plan elements. These are the 10 elements that are required by the state of South Carolina to be in the plan. This has a lot of that background information that we talked about at the very beginning of the process. So it has all of the how the population is changing, what kind of housing exists here, projections for the future, economic development, and all of that. So as I mentioned, the executive summary kind of lays out what are the big points. So it has the vision statement we've reviewed with you all. It has those four major goal areas. And so just to remind you, the vision statement is the city of Malden envisions the future as a vibrant and sustainable community where a thriving city center, dynamic cultural and recreational amenities, and livable neighborhoods connect people, cultures, and opportunities. And the goal is to use those four goals to achieve that vision statement. So those four sub-goals are to guide positive growth, create vibrant and thriving centers, expand cultural amenities, and connect the community. And so last time we were here, we went through all those and talked through what kinds of recommendations fall underneath those categories. And one of the things that you gave us feedback on is, okay, so what do we need to do immediately after the plan? What are the actual next implementation steps? So we added this section here called Our Path Forward. And this is essentially the four major steps to be taken after adopting the comprehensive plan. And so that first step is regulatory alignment. So going through and revising the development and design regulations to match what is in the comprehensive plan to get the building form that we're talking about in those activity centers, make recommendations to improve streets, sidewalks, trails, all of that. The second step is infrastructure investment. So we've identified a lot of major infrastructure improvements in this plan. How are we going to invest in those improvements? How are we going to fund them? The third step is enacting an annexation strategy. You may remember when we talked about the future land use map, we also had an annexation strategy map with three different phases of annexation. We'll look at that in a little bit. But this walks through exactly how to do that annexation strategy. And then that last step is maintaining a high quality of life. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but it provides specific next steps for that strategy. So at the beginning, it's just high level, but this section comes up again in the recommendation section and provides more detail. So this introduction tells you why are we doing a comprehensive plan. This is for the entire city of Malden. What is a comprehensive plan? It talks a little bit about the strategic plan that you all adopted last year, as well as the city center plan. Talks about the planning process, which started in January of 2025. as well as the public engagement that we had throughout the process. So those were screenshots from the community survey and public meetings. And then that kind of all wraps up with what are the primary themes that were emerging from the public input, and these fed directly into where the recommendations ended up. And then this last section before we get into the recommendations just tells you how to use the plan for city staff, for appointed and elected officials, for developers and property owners, and for others. And it also tells you what content is in here. So that vision and framework section is really the main section you'll be using on a regular basis in terms of what are we supposed to do with the comprehensive plan, how do we implement it when looking at rezoning or development proposals. And so that's here, the vision and framework. And we didn't start off with a little bit of a narrative about why we need to have this vision, why this exists. And then we went right into what are our priorities. So we repeated that vision and those four goals we mentioned earlier. And then this is where we have all of the details. So while we mentioned these in the executive summary, here is where we list out all of the supporting actions, and there's quite a few of them. So I didn't intend to get through all of them with you tonight. Hopefully you've had a chance to review them. And then we'll come back once we go through the whole plan if you have specific comments, concerns, changes to anything in the plan. But this does spell out what exact actions would fall underneath each of these goals. And you'll notice for each of these goal areas, there's a description at the top paragraph, and then there's these kind of sub-bullets. And so these are the main steps, and then this section provides the details on those steps. So it's hopefully relatively clear, but there are a lot of actions for each goal. And so underneath this first goal about guiding positive growth is where we have your future land use map. And this we went over at the last meeting as well, so I won't go too much into detail about it, but here's where we kind of show, okay, so this is your future land use map, and now the zoning needs to match what the future land use map is showing. So that's part of that regulatory alignment of making the zoning match what we're showing in the future land use map. And so for each of those future land use territory areas, I believe we had chosen at the last meeting the description of all the character or areas. I think we might have added some more context in terms of the primary and secondary uses, as well as the transportation network for each specific area. So this way, when you're looking at a development proposal, you can really say, well, this is within the mixed employment and industry area. So based on that, these are the uses that would be desired here, and this is what transportation should look like. And then there's also a little narrative description in a photo as well. And then, as I mentioned, we also have this potential annexation areas map, which I believe was also shared in the previous meeting. And here just kind of shows you the three different tiers of annexation in the future. And this goes out all the way to the planning boundary. This create vibrant and thriving centers was one that we talked about a lot the last meeting. I think one of you all were very interested in making sure we implement it. So I did want to point out there is some more detail in this section than was in the previous presentation that we gave. So you'll see a lot of the same overall topics, but a little bit more detail on how to get there. And there's also some more graphics and things so that someone who hasn't looked at it before, if they're interested in kind of diving more into it, they can kind of see where does this come from, and they can also see some existing examples as well as some case studies. So we also have a couple of pages in here about case studies of similar places and what they've done that has been kind of similar that could be attributed to Malden as well. So this section is actually the most lengthy of the goal areas, which I think kind of aligns with the fact that you all are most interested in this, so it's quite long. But it has a lot of good stuff in there. And then the last goal area is expanding cultural amenities. So as I mentioned, there are a bunch of specific actions in here. But to help you all with implementation, we added another section called Our Path Forward. And so this is what I was talking about in the executive summary about how we've expanded on what exactly we do next. So For instance, for step one regulatory alignment, it tells you update your ordinances, and it has some specific recommendations about adding new street standards. They need to see you're finding some of the zoning districts, redistricting, things like that. And then it talks about updating policies, so adopting a complete streets policy, identifying needed bus stops and related facilities. And then that last phase is proactive rezoning. So now that we have regulations that match the future land use map and some of the recommendations of the plan, what properties need to be rezoned to better achieve what we're wanting? And we did the same thing for each of these four kind of next steps. So for infrastructure investment, establish a funding mechanism, and then it has some more details. Designate funding and projects, and some more details. And so I don't want to spend too much time going through these, but hopefully this is what you are after in terms of having a little bit more details. What do we do next? How do we do it? It really kind of breaks it down into, as you can see, the subnumbers. And under the subnumbers, you can someone pull up some things to consider for each of these recommendations. And while these all do overlap with some of the actions that were here before, this is even more detailed and exactly step by step what to do. So that's kind of the big things I wanted to talk through. Happy to review some of the plan elements as well, but I know we spent a lot of time at the beginning of this process talking about all that background data. And it's pretty much all here. It's shortened. We didn't want to make this too exhaustive of a plan. I know the general public doesn't love reading hundreds of pages of data. And so we tried to provide the things that we thought were most important and keep it relatively graphic and mappy while also being comprehensive enough to have all the things that you really needed here. The one section I did want to speak on in the elements is towards the end. So the very last element in the comprehensive plan is the priority investment element. And in your previous plan, you had identified some priority investment areas. And so these are areas that the city really wants to focus on, encouraging redevelopment, you know, mixed use, has market rate housing incentives, things like that. We went through this with David and Seth, and we ended up adding some new priority investment areas. And we actually, this was, David's idea, to add kind of a hierarchy of investment areas. So we have two strings, a primary priority investment area and secondary investment area. And so the priority investment areas are really similar to what was in your last plan. The city center, Butler Road to be expanded, North Main Street, Bridges Road, and then Bridgeway Station is a new one. And then the secondary growth areas are these kind of emerging areas. So South Main Street, Miller Road, Ashmore Bridge Road, and Fork Shoals Road. And so this could just potentially help the city as they're looking at ways to fund specific projects. It's kind of a, we've already identified these are areas where we want new development to occur, or redevelopment, or extensive development, and so if there's something that we could get to help that happen, kind of identify as a priority here. We do sometimes include a list of capital projects, but we have instead referenced the city CIP if they're going to be updating that sometime soon. So just kind of referencing that the CIP is also very relevant to the comprehensive plan. So that was a very quick run through of the comprehensive plan. And there's a lot of things that I skimmed over. And I think probably spend the bulk of the meeting talking through if you have specific questions, concerns, things you would like changed in the plan, and acknowledge that you do have until May 26th. So if you leave this meeting and you think, you know, I didn't really look too closely, I want to look a little bit closer and have more comments, we're also happy to take comments after the meeting as well to make any changes you might like before that May 26th meeting. And then, of course, when it goes to council, council also has the right to make additional changes.
I think it's, I've been over the full plan, and I think, you know, from what we said last time, we wanted to get out of cookie-cutter type, and I was talking to David. In the first part of the plan, I think y'all did that well. And basically, the entire plan, and the end, more so, the main thing is, you know, talking about property and investment and everything, because Maldon has always said they wanted a downtown. I hope I'm wrong, and I don't think we'll ever, in this situation, I don't think we'll ever have a quote downtown like maybe Simpsonville, and we've got Bridgeway Station, we've got the Pickle Yard and everything, and we're incorporating a lot of things into a lot of areas. And I think y'all did a great job in changing that, and I appreciate that. Now, what we need to do is find the land and the investment to move forward in some of these areas. And I think that's the challenging portion of it. I don't know whether that's what you wanted to hear.
Anything you'd like to share?
I guess one of the things that several of us had talked about at the last time was how Butler, Maine, was such a big, huge animal with a lot of aspects outside of our control. And we talked about potentially, instead of trying and beating our head up against the wall in those areas as the primary areas, would it make more sense to look at the secondary areas where we have influence and wouldn't cost as much? So I guess I'm wanting to understand y'all's thought process in still keeping Butler and Maine as the primary and not looking at the secondaries to try to pull them forward and be able to get some movement in the plan.
Maine, you're referring to 270.
Yeah.
And maybe you could kind of go through the mobility section. Connect the community.
I think that the plan's ultimate goal is to, while recognizing that there's going to continue to be a significant amount of through traffic coming from one place to another, not necessarily Maldon traffic, hitting this intersection out here, that it remains a very attractive commercial area because of how much traffic that it sees, right? And so the trying to maybe redirect certain types of growth away from where the people are may not find as much success without some other kind of hook. Now, Bridgeway Station has a different kind of outlook and things, so it's going to have its own center of gravity, but there have been a lot of investments here in terms of what the city's done and doing. The people are here, they're coming by, it's very attractive to those in the commercial real estate business, and it declining as a, it not receiving the kind of investment that may not solve a traffic problem necessarily, but could improve the character and some of the functionality of this area, I think is, maintaining that focus is probably a good idea. But to David's point, the connecting the community, the intent of that is to provide additional alternative routes through the city as possible, so that not all the traffic would have to necessarily use those two main roads to get from one place to another. That takes money, that takes time, that takes persuasion, takes long-term planning. But I think that's a worthwhile enterprise. Emptying the street out in front of here, cars would probably not be a place where you'd want to be financially or otherwise as a city, despite the difficulty it causes people every day.
One of the things they included in this plan is some recommendations for street design that we fully intend to incorporate into our zoning and development regulations. They're as of right there. I don't know if you want to go into any of that a little bit more, but...
The intent of some of these is you have a lot of legacy streets were developed at a time when things like pedestrian traffic and bike traffic was not an important thing to the people in the community. And so those kinds of facilities that would allow that to take place safely, at least, were not included. So you have Build a Better Butler going on right now to improve that main artery. But this would take some of the additional legacy roads, county, you know, roads that have been around for a long time, farm market roads that became part of the city, and, you know, have a new type of street section for those, encourage the investment from the city through whatever means it might be available to add those types of facilities as well, so there's more ability to walk or ride a bike to get places, especially for shorter trips in the city, as well as, you know, advancing the completion and extension of the Swamp Rabbit Trail through the city that would again provide additional spine or backbone for people to be able to travel through the city and reach other trail connections that would provide alternatives to driving, getting out of the main roads.
And I think here I just want to add, while, you know, the primary focus is still on Butler and Main, there's also really that focus on, well, if we can make everything connected, then we can attract people to go from one place to the next and have these secondary areas that kind of support the primary areas as well. It's more a connected system versus having a downtown. Now you just have a few cool places that are a little different and all different in little ways. You can get easily between them.
Did you have any follow-up questions or comments or suggestions, Dan?
Thinking. I just want to make sure we didn't leave this topic before we jump into another.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, there's a tremendous number of eyes that go through Maine and Butler every day. But, you know, again, the bulk of the traffic on Maine is going south of Ringo County, Simpsonville, Fountain Inn, you know, northern Lawrence County. The ones using Butler, the vast majority of those are going to Woodruff Road and Scuppletown area, Five Forks area. It's hard for me to see how commercial development, you're going to stop those people and get them to use that area before they go home. They're going to go home first, and then they may choose to come back. That just is my fault with regard to that. And again, I mean, it's, like I said last time, it's the second busiest intersection in the county, and most of those people are not, don't live in Baldwin, and they're going somewhere else, they're not coming here. It's gonna take a lot of money, it's gonna take a lot of effort to push some of those changes through with DOT. And I just see, if we want to get something done, I just see a lot, it being a lot easier to get things done in your secondary growth areas. And I do see that we've got a lot more control over those areas than we do right there in the middle. And it's not going to take near the money, you know, that it's going to take right there in the center. But we're minding.
Yeah, and that's a decision that the, you know, the prior investment areas and the identification of these activity centers were, you know, designed in a manner of whether, you know, where the city council and, you know, development interests could, you know, through policy, through budgeting for capital improvements, through investments in real estate development, you could see an organic shift in where development is occurring, where that interest is, and I think, you know, ideally you're providing a community where investments are being made throughout. I think the types of investments will differ from area to area. I think the city's probably invested in this area to the point where disengaging would potentially be difficult. I don't, you know. but I think we'll probably see over time.
Can you zoom into the map on the right there? And I just want to ask the members here. So if you look at this map here, it shows where we've identified some target areas that could become different type of centers. You'll see Malden City Center there in the middle in blue. To the right, you'll see the intersection kind of around Butler and 385. Above that on the top is around Tanner and Bergen, where District South is going. Then you go down from below that, you see Bridgeway Station. When you get to the bottom, there's that Brookwood area where it intersects with South Main Street. And then over to the far left, lower left corner is at intersection of the Ashmore Bridge and Fort Shoals, where the new public shopping center is. And we've kind of envisioned these as both a combination of existing and emerging centers. But so my question for the group here is, are there any places that you think we've missed that we should also maybe target as could potentially become a thriving center that that we've just missed on this?
I think the Conesty Park is a great green space for the city. I don't know how much extra room there is for development or ideas there are for stuff on West Butler.
And they showed Conesty on here. The two I did mention that are great are also centers that relate to us, but they're just outside the city limits.
Yeah. We
colored them a different color there.
Yeah. But that's something that it's been a really positive development for the area. I think a lot of people enjoy that. I think I lived here since the 70s. I didn't know there was that much stuff there. So that's fantastic. And there still seems to be quite a lot of, I don't know, developable area on West Butler. I don't have a specific idea what we could do to encourage more development there.
I see potential on Bridges Road extending from Bridgeway Station eventually. And I think that we need to think of that in the future, how you connect what we consider the city center with Bridgeway Station. Because right now I think it's two separate areas. And often people talk about Bridgeway as being not even part of Malden. It's its own thing. So from a marketing perspective, how do we look at branding and connecting Malden and Bridgeway Station a little closer? Now I was going to ask...
real quick before you get off that, when you say Bridges Road, then you're talking about the section between Bridgeway and Butler?
Okay. And I know there's kind of mixed residential and some commercial in there. But if we're looking at new zoning, you know, maybe this potential will start developing out away from Bridgeway Station. But also, before we even do that, we need to look at infrastructure. And because I think when I start to look at that road, it's going to be at least a three-lane with center turn lane. And I think that's going to happen very soon, especially with the stadium being built there. There's going to be a lot of congestion all of a sudden on that corridor. I was going to ask you, David, when's the last time we had a significant traffic study done in the city?
Well, we only ever really do traffic studies for individual development projects. I'm thinking you're asking, a holistic
study to understand, to Dan's point, essentially there's an hour in time in the mornings and at night in the evening that, 276 to parking lot, essentially. And no one wants to get off of that and try and get back home. That's why people want to stop it and spend time time to do anything. Even if we had the amenities, as long as you have that much traffic backed up. So I'm curious, with all the other arteries we have, is there a way to relieve some of the pressure and take them off to it and direct it in a way where maybe they would stop? Anyway, that's...
It's a good idea, because, and they pulled it up here, DOT will update their counts each year, or what the daily number of vehicles is on a given, on the major roadways within the city. I've been involved with communities in the past, including while I was a principal, who've done transportation plans. I try to look at all this and figure it out. That would probably be a great next step to take from this comprehensive plan at some point. Trying to dig more into that.
Well, every project we look at anymore, traffic is the main conversation. It's driving everything. We just might as well face that. And it's limiting growth, I think, right now for Marlin. So I think traffic is an element we definitely have to consider.
Yeah, one of the things, David, I talked to the traffic planner with Appalachian Cog. He's the one that maintains, or they are, Appalachian Cog is the one that maintains the GPAS model. And he says that they update that model when they get information. But I asked him, you know, and a lot of things they use in the model, they talk about traffic generators and nodes of development and different things like this, and different types of development generate different volumes of traffic and stuff like that. And so I asked him about some of the new subdivisions that have been permitted here in Marlin. He said, we've never gotten anything from planning, you know, telling us that there's going to be a 500 unit, 1,000 unit subdivision.
That makes me wonder, how do they get any information?
he says it's up to the individual, you know, municipalities and planning groups or whoever, to give them that information so that they can input it into them.
Never even knew they wanted that type of information before, so that's good to know.
Yeah, he said they would. He said he would love to have it because it makes.
He needs to ask.
Yeah, he said it makes it. You know, when they update the model every 5 years or 10 years or whatever, he said it makes it a lot harder. You know, if you updated it every 6 months. Based on zoning hearings and different things like this, or, you know, planning commission meetings or whatever, it would be easier for them to keep it updated.
How accurate is that information?
Pardon?
Their models.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's only as accurate as they're receiving information.
Yeah, it sounds like they're missing a lot of information.
Yeah.
That's why I'm just curious, and I don't know if DOT or you go to get a really...
So,
brand new traffic study for at least a major artery to know what's going on.
So our Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is GPATS, who helps to direct federal monies for private transportation projects, they do a long-range looking transportation plan every so many years. In fact, they're working on doing another one now. So they look at it from an even larger region and do it that way. But your thoughts here is a good one. So maybe could we look at doing something that's just the city of Marlin model, so that we don't get drowned out in the regional plan that GPAT does for a much broader area.
Well, and I think even if by doing that, you might be able to look at controlling certain traffic lights and sequence those to help the traffic flow.
Identify where there's some low-hanging fruit that could go a long way.
Yes.
Right.
But again, some of that stuff is outside our control, because most of the traffic light, particularly that we're talking about, the DOT maintained. You know, they've got their traffic center, you know, that looks at all that stuff.
Apparently, there's a multi-agency.
And, you know, getting DOT to change the traffic pattern, say you wanted to, you know, make this stretch one way or make a, you know, some kind of a circle or something like that. I mean, getting them to, you can't even, it's a pothole, you know, much less.
Well, we know. In fact, the city administrator and I had a meeting with DOT a few weeks ago, and we were trying to talk about West Butler Road and some things that we thought would be good to help out with, just, if nothing else, with the safety on West Butler Road, and I felt like that whole conversation fell on deaf ears.
Yeah. And relative to your question, David, I think the areas that have been identified, I think are the ones that need to be identified. It's hard for me to see any others developing, but I mean, the Ashmore Bridge, Brookwood, Ridgeway, you know, Tanner, those are, I mean, those are great, you know, nodes to look at developing right there.
Well, I appreciate the Bridges Road, because we actually do have Bridges Road included in the priority investment area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good one.
I can certainly add it to growth.
I've got a question for you, and it has to do with the vision statement. And I know this vision statement was originally developed with the strategic plan, and so it's good that we've got that consistency and you organize at least part of this plan around that vision statement. Would it be possible, or would it be too much trouble, to the council adopted a refresh vision statement, Mayor, in the Parks and Rec plan, and I don't know if it would be possible some way to at least just kind of reference that here and include it some way, so that we recognize where this vision statement came from, but also making sure that we incorporate how that's been refined in the Parks and Rec plan. And I'll send that to you, so you've got it. Could be.
Thank you. I think we do have a Parks and Rec
vision plan. I might be able to find it, but if you want to
send it,
I'll
make it for you. Thank you. Glad to see you guys. You were looking at the statistics of, right? And the statistics of came up right before it came up. We could see that land was there. And every time I would drive past the road, I would say, well, somebody sitting on my gold mine right there. So the district cell came up, it's a very wonderful, nice apartment complex in the residential area. The one beside is the elderly homeless, and you know, that's a phenomenally good one too. Are we also in the process of this whole exercise, comprehensive plan, are we also looking to see if we could get some land, meaningful land, and kind of develop it from scratch? Or are we just looking at already the areas which are already developed and just try to enhance it for the easing of the traffic?
Are you asking about like land to bring into the city?
That's
part of this annexation strategy that they've included in here. And the map on the right there with the different, I'll call them different hues of green. We've identified their priority areas for annexation, which is the dark green, I believe. Mm-hmm. And some of that, a lot of that's infill. A lot of it is undeveloped land. And so those are kind of like represent the most opportunistic areas to annex, because we already have services that we're providing in the vicinity of those unincorporated areas. When you, the next lighter, well, the lightest shade of green in there represents already established communities. That's why they're the lowest priority, is because they're kind of on the outlier. They're some of the outliers of town, and they're already established residential communities. And to be quite honest with you, the city at best probably breaks even on residential communities as far as the resources it gains from them versus what it has to expend on them. And then that the middle green hue is more undeveloped areas or underdeveloped areas. They're on the periphery, they're kind of outside the bounds of the city, still in our planning area, and that's kind of why they're that second priority areas, because if we have an opportunity to bring them in for the sake of good development, let's do it. So that's the point of this annexation strategy section and this map, is to kind of help us, guide us, and prioritize for us some opportunities to annex.
Sure. And if we leave under the private ownership, does it become any challenging at all for us to get annexed and get into this comprehensive plan? Or
when properties are privately owned, it's always really at the decision of that private owner to decide if they want to annex their property into the city. Now, we've done a good job of being a developer-friendly staff, if you will. So what we see a lot of times is developers who are doing a project, if they have an opportunity to bring it into Malden, they will do it because they would rather work with us than the various bureaucratic layers at Greenville County and the non-responsiveness they often get. In fact, right now, we are working with someone who is looking at doing an industrial development, spec buildings, and we're working to try to, it's on Kent Way, so we're working to try to get a way to be able to touch it and annex it because they want to bring it into the city, but they just rather deal with us than the lack of response they get from Greenville County. But that's typically what we see is at the time when someone's looking at doing a development, they'll consider bringing it into the city.
Okay. We're looking at the old kind of golf here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, maybe that fits the room. This is good. Like, cautionary tales from neighboring areas that we can learn from and not mistake, and not make the same mistake.
You mentioned a second ago, David, about the revenue versus cost relationship with the light green areas and the existing subdivisions. What, I mean, for our information, relatively speaking, what are the cost-income relationship between, you know, private residences, single-family residences, apartment complexes, industrial complexes, commercial? I know there's got to be a different revenue with each of those different kinds versus the cost. And
yeah.
At one point in time, someone had made a statement about with all the apartments that it costs the city more to provide services to apartment complexes than the revenue they get from apartment complexes. But I don't know that, so that's why I'm asking.
It's actually more the other way around. And so let me touch on the revenue side first. When you look at a single family home, those properties are taxed at a much lower rate. And that's the only revenue we generally get or immediately get related to a single family home is the property tax. And they're assessed at a 4% value unless they're renter occupied. When you look at apartments, they're taxed at a much greater value. They get assessed at that 6% level. And then on top of that, we also get a business license from the company that's managing and running the apartment community. So they represent a much greater source of revenue for the city. On the service side, we actually provide, there's less services we have to provide to the apartment community. When you're looking at a single family home, we provide them trash services, help as well as fire and police. On the apartment side, it's just fire and police that we're providing as, I'll say, routine services. The trash piece is not there. And actually, the trash piece is probably the piece of service that costs the most, because they're touching them every single week, going out there and picking up the trash, whereas that's not having, needing to happen in an apartment community, because theirs is collected by a private company that they contract out. And then when you look at that, that's another business license that we get, is that garbage company who's going out to collect the trash from an apartment community. So apartments generally is a positive gain for the city when it comes to cost revenue analysis, where it's not quite that great for single family. And then when you get into commercial and industrial, our revenue resources go up even more because of business license and property taxes are even greater. And again, you're looking at the services that we provide, and it's even more marginal. Businesses and industry don't really require police and fire services on a real frequent basis. So that's kind of a high overview of how that breaks down.
The concentrating on some of these areas that potentially annex or change usage and stuff like that, I guess, ties into their recommendation for, you know, funding sources for infrastructure and other type of, you know, amenity improvements. We've got to get that revenue from somewhere. And, you know, being able to develop the nodes at Ashmore and Brookwood and Bridgeway and Tanner, bringing more commercial development in those areas and kind of mini centers, if you will, would increase, sounds like increase the revenue.
Yeah.
Greatly,
yeah.
Compared to maybe annexing of existing subdivisions.
Exactly.
That's certainly one way that the city can proceed forward with this, both the annexation strategy as well as, you know, other type, when it's looking at types of investments to make, looking at what that tax increment is, how much more do you get from the value of the property pre-development, post-development, and maybe make a policy decision to dedicate some share of those incrementally increased amount of funds towards making capital improvements in those areas, just so that when development is occurring, you're able to say, well, we're paying this, we're paying for these improvements with the additional value that we're receiving from the development of those areas. We're not taking from this area over here, we're, you know, investing the dollars that are going to be coming to us in the future for that new development.
I guess, and not to put the Mr. Mayor on the spot, but I would be interested to hear the thought about the revenue generation needs of the, for the infrastructure and the other amenities. Those are budget talks within city council and everything. What, I mean, are there any prospects or are there any of those items that we can look at as part of this plan that you guys have maybe already talked about or considered?
No specifics on any of that, but I mean, we get a briefing just like every one of you guys as far as what we could and could not do when our budget's developed based on whatever revenue was projected. We've got a great finance department for that, and then providing those services. But really, the revenue generation plays into our top priority when we look at should we annex that property or what would be out there, and look at this. We'll be looking at that today before we if Andy walks in with a hat chewed off pencil, we know this one must be a tough one. don't really look at it that way, you know. I'm sitting here listening and trying to figure out where we're at. You know, I've read the 130 pages. I've comprehended about three of them. It is me. I don't know, I've been here all my life, and I know another vision we're working on, and I also know what our areas of concern were if we were going to grow. What did we have to do? People told us years ago, you know, we wanted more retail, we wanted this, we wanted this, we wanted Targets, we wanted this, we wanted this, and we contacted all those people. And we didn't have enough, what they call them, the heads and beds. And so then we started growing, and we're getting, we take the blame for Ashmore Bridge Road when we didn't own any of that property. That was property owners that did their deals and then came to us wanting to do it. So, you know, it basically was a no-brainer there. I do sit on the GPAC committee, as David referred to earlier, and, they're working on the 2050 plan using 2010 traffic study data. I can tell you most of the people that DOT knows me my first name, and not pleasantly. We can't wait 15 years to do anything, and that's what they're doing. It's frustrating, as David hears and Seth hears when I come back from the meetings. East Butler, that was a 2016 project. Done in 2016, $7 million. It's now a 2027 project for $39 million for the same amount of road. Yeah, so there's your revenue issue. We have a novel idea. Take the federal government out of it. Let them keep their money. We could have got it done a lot cheaper and it would have been done by then.
So, well, I guess that's discussion. One of the things I've seen too in some of the areas, well, Charleston, York, where they did their little one penny tax and they basically told the federal government, told the state, get out of here, we're going to do this. And of course, the state said, okay, even though it was a state run.
Well, it's funny when you knock on doors in the city of Marlton, especially when you're trying to get reelected, I'll say 80% of the people don't have a problem with raising their taxes if they get something, roads, walk sidewalks, and things like that. And we just don't need shoulder. But I heard y'all talk about Bridgeway, and you know, like, Bridgeway is a partnership that's phenomenal. But it's designed to bring the people from Woodruff Road to Bridgeway and the east side of Malden to Bridgeway. Our downtown walkable village concept is designed for the west side, bringing them here into our city downtown walkable concept kind of thing, which is perfect. Done a great job if you've seen the theater and the enterprise and that kind of pulling people in. I find it interesting that the low-hanging fruit is redeveloped in some of our older neighborhoods. I drive through them every day. I hear the same thing, I think one of you guys mentioned traffic. It's like Malden is just absolutely the worst city in the world with traffic. Obviously, you haven't traveled much.
Exactly.
We're the most spoiled city.
Yeah,
in South Carolina, we think we ought to be able to go from here to there in a minute and a half or 2 minutes. Now it takes 7 minutes.
You go up to their neck of the woods, up around some areas of Charlotte.
Yeah, out to other Georgia, and those Lexington and all those. So And I understand, I've been here all my life, and I agree, when I get in my car, I want everybody to get out of my way. But they don't. And so, we've talked about all that on council, and the same one, what y'all are going through here, we've done similar kind of things. Division statement, I don't know how many, we had more than one meeting to develop a vision statement. And we finally said, a copy and paste the old one and change two words. That's what we did. And,
Well, you referenced the traffic. Those of us who've been here a long time, we're taking side streets and going all around and everything. And
that's what I do.
Never get on these.
But everybody's trying their shortcut.
Foreigners stay.
Well, I'll tell you, so I've gone back to the Simpsonville for a few things here recently in the evening, late afternoon, early evening. And I always knew my back roads I could take to get to the Well, now everyone knows about my back roads.
Everybody knows about them.
They're not fast anymore.
Well, Paul blockaded one of them, and that was my cup.
I know, right.
We understand it, but we can't give up on the vision we got just to solve the traffic issue. Now, City of Greenville bought the rights for the traffic signalization. They built a huge traffic control center out on Alton. Actually, they didn't build it, particularly from Greenville. But, and talking to Knox, he said, you know, negotiate with them, get your own traffic lights. And I said, fine, where do we put it? When we put a control center and get it, it's difficult. And they don't talk to one another either. The pothole department does not talk to the traffic signal department. So, I guess I'm rambling, but I don't have a good answer for you.
You
know,
you are.
Well, I'm old. I get used to it.
Well, and coming back to Dan's initial question, I think really at the end of the day, the challenge is where's the money for it, and I know we're talking about, you know, well, can we chase after or prioritize certain types of development, certain annexations, but really we can do that, but it doesn't move the needle very much. Certainly not like the penny sales tax that you brought up. Now the penny sales tax is an excellent tool. And maybe we'll have to have it here one day, because those communities you mentioned, they have much better roads because they have that paying sales tax that they will fund a lot of that. But we've got so many roads here owned by DOT, and they have very little money to do anything about it, and the cities have even less money to do anything for it. The city of Mullen does budget money each year to go towards roads, but we have to leverage that with C funds to even start to make some little dent, and that's just going towards resurfacing the roads we've already got.
DOT does not have a money issue, and they don't have a lack of projects. They have a lack of construction companies and paving companies and people that build roads. Justin says, you know, don't bring me any more projects because I don't have the manpower, not DOT manpower, the paving company, the graders and all that. They left our state because we didn't do anything for 14 years. Go to Georgia, Alabama, Florida, the roads are fantastic. That's where all they went because they had work for 10, 16, 20 years. We didn't. We had Ashmore and Sloan. That's another thing. That simple. So, you know, you got what you got, and what are you going to do with it?
I have a nitpick. Sorry. So, I like the whole install thing. The graphics are cool. And I have seen other, I mean, we've had some good success with that already. I see a couple of buildings in front of City Hall here on the graphics. Is that really what we wanted to do on page 43? I know it's a concept. I know it's not binding or anything, but I think it's, yeah, right there on the lower left.
Wasn't that part of it?
Yeah, I see us putting,
yeah, with
We're talking about putting something in the front?
The grass out front, fire department, and the old laundry out front.
Okay.
As long as it's owned by the government, it does not generate revenue. So it's prime real estate, according to the law, for the front East Buffalo Road. So if we could do something, build it around City Hall, and that was one of the ideas to do that. And I don't know if you've noticed, but one thing we struggle with is parking. And that's another one.
But if the East Butler improvements do happen and are effective, then yeah, that would be cool. Just the idea that we're putting a building up in front of City Hall, I think.
Well, the intent is that if that does come about, too, it'll be more than just a building. It'll be creating intentional outdoor areas that are attractive and become a destination in and of itself. Having wider sidewalks like you would see in a typical downtown, having, incorporating plaza type areas. So while this is a very simplistic drawing, the expectation and the vision is that it will be something that will attract.
It'll feel more like they're driving through it.
Yeah, you could think of some of the multi-level, multi-story buildings like they have on Stone Avenue. While it may not be to that scale necessarily, it's that kind of development that has more of an urban form and is intentional about the outdoor
Stone and Wayham.
Yeah.
What was the, I think it was kind of an industrial use plan, I'm going back to that page now, for the old Texas plan. I'm going to keep bringing that up, sorry. It's been sitting there since I was a little kid. It's kind of, I think it's shown in purple.
Which page are you on?
I think I'm on.
Oh, on the future lands map.
18
yeah,
right there.
One of the corners of Bonnier.
Mixed employment and industry kind of creeps up into that. Just is kind of there on the areas. I don't know if there's anything we can really do. Or if anybody has any thoughts. But.
Texas is actually owned by two guys who were out of Chicago, I believe, who love it. It has active businesses in it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe not complete there. Maybe they're out of
Yeah.
Just repurpose. This is so close to our city center.
What's it,
the one we're going to have?
You like it?
Right here.
Well, and this represents, this is a good question, because this kind of represents the challenge you sometimes have with these types of plans, is there's what it is immediately and what makes it economically viable immediately right now. And then, but there's this dream or this vision. What could it really become though down the road? And trying to figure out how to bridge that is the challenging part. Thankfully, we can always amend comprehensive plans, just like we can amend zoning ordinances. So, well, it's not out of the imagination that someone could come someday and want to be ready to invest in a building like that and turn it into something much different than it is now. And I think we would be very excited about that and want to remove all the obstacles we could to help that happen. And I think what we've got right now is just a plan that shows, well, this is how it's going on at its current track right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part of the future landing map too. It's a guide, but it's not standing. And so at any point in time, things change. And if someone came to you with a crazy, great idea that they wanted to do somewhere in the city and isn't on the future landing map, it doesn't mean you have to say no. It means you say, you know what? It doesn't say on the future landing map, but some things have changed. This is a really good idea. We should still probably do that and just amend the future landing map.
Well, we've got to have more realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With regard to that, one of the things I've been really interested in the last few months, the chairman of the county council is sending everybody emails your weekly newsletter. I found it fascinating, the few newsletters that he spent to talk about the planning process, the zoning process, and the regulatory process, and how that he thinks it has diverged in Greenville County, where you approve, as we're doing right now, a comprehensive plan, but then over the course of time, before the next plan comes around, the zoning changes, regulatory, you know, legislative changes, and they diverge from the plan. What kind of challenge do we have? I know you guys recommend that was number one on your plan, was to make sure we get the zoning to be cohesive with the plan. What kind of challenge do we have, David or Mayor, with regard to that, with regard to the zoning and with regard to current city regulations and everything to get them to support what we want to do?
Yeah, so we've got our zoning ordinance is an old document, but it's had sections updated over the years, so it's got some sections that are newer than others. But we recognize that with this plan, this is an opportunity that we need to take to overhaul the zoning. So that is our expectation, our plan is to, after this is adopted, to get started right away, really have already started, but to get started right away in overhauling the zoning ordinance so it's consistent with this. And it helps lead us into the future. So, because right now, it's the zoning districts we've had are the same types of, same probably zoning districts we've had for I don't know how many decades.
Do we have the backbone in the city council to do it now, or within the organization, within the city?
I think they've been asking and anxious for that more than even this.
That's going to happen pretty fast.
What about any regulations or, you know, city ordinances or anything that have been approved since the last plan? Are they pretty much in line with the plan, or we're going to have to do a lot of wholesale changes in ordinances and regulations?
Yeah, there's nothing that I can think of there that's really out of line when we're talking about other ordinances outside the zoning ordinance. I think any new ones there are fine, no problem. There may be some other ordinances, though, that we have to go back and take a look at, like our environmental ordinance that has to do with nuisances and things like that. We may need to go back and take a look at that, make sure that it's in step with what this vision is and what this plan is, so that we're using code enforcement, for example, as a tool to help us get there. So that's just one example. But of all the new ordinances that the city has adopted over recent years, I can't think of any that we need to go back to necessarily.
I think to kind of the mayor's point about the vision statement being pretty much the same, it seems like, you know, the consultant works in a lot of places coming here. The vision exists here. People, the leadership wants to see this pretty much happen. They've been talking about it for a long time, and that helps a lot when you're talking about what could stop this from occurring. The fact that leadership wants it is really a big
In fact, we've had council kind of tell us we really don't want to do any more rezoning until at least we get this, but we also know our zoning ordinance needs to be updated in a major way.
Or are there, I'm assuming there's probably a few properties that with this plan need to be rezoned to bring them into compliance with this. Do we have to wait on the property owner to ask for rezoning, or can we?
No. So we can incorporate that as part of the overhaul we do. I actually anticipate that we may have all brand new districts, at least by name, and as well as by as the design of the regulations and standards that are in them. So we may see, while a property that's zoned residential may still be zoned residential, what that district is called and what some of the updated standards in that might be little different. And we can do that as part of the new zoning ordinance we adopt. We'd be adopting essentially a new zoning map for the city.
Not to say anything about the process, but it's taken us over a year to get this far with this. How is it going to take us a year to get the zoning stuff, or 2 years to get this thing?
So you never know until you get into the actual conversations and discussions about it with Planning Commission, with City Council, and understand more of what they want to see changed. But we'll be working on that in-house, and I've had a lot of experience in this area, so I don't want to take that long. And I don't think anyone does.
There's been more than a few meetings where having clear language in those ordinances and in our plan has helped us kind of guide what development makes it, and maybe what we might suggest something else for. So I think that's good that this change is good.
You got quiet on you. That's it.
You're really good for me.
So,
you want to go through our next steps now?
So I know staff has some additional items they'd like, and I've heard a couple other things to add to the plan. So following this meeting, we're going to go ahead and make some of those edits and send it back to staff for review. And we'll hope to turn that around pretty quickly to share with you all before your May 26th. So on your May 26th meeting, we'll be asking you to make a formal recommendation to consider recommending the comprehensive plan to council. At that point, we'll go on to council. They'll have a standing committee meeting, June 1st. And then they'll do a first reading and a public hearing on June 15th. And then hopefully, if they're good with it, during that process, they might also ask for some changes, but it's possible they'll ask for additional edits that we'll make. And then hopefully by July 10th, that will be the second reading adoption of the comprehensive plan.
Is it July 10th or is it July? It should be whatever that third Monday is.
But as I mentioned, as we're making these edits with staff, if you think of other things that you didn't look at closely until tonight, feel free to share this with Dave and the channel with us.
Thank you.
Turn it back to you, Jonathan, to adjourn us.
Okay. Thanks for all the great discussion. I appreciate everybody showing up. Thank you so much for all your hard work on the presentation. I think it's generally favorable. I have feelings about it. Like I said, it was a long time coming, so I'm glad you guys are able to help me so much. But yeah, please do look over it and again. And if you see anything, we can talk about it if you need. But unless there's anything else, we'll adjourn for tonight.